Welcome to Muffliato, a Harry Potter podcast where we fill your ears to prevent you from hearing nearby conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Blake, and today Josh and I need to find a date as we continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire and come now to the 22nd chapter, The Unexpected Task. Now, Josh, I did not really connect two and two together until rereading this chapter. I never really paid much attention to the chapter title on why on earth this chapter specifically is called The Unexpected Task, you know, coming off the bat of the first task and then the unexpected task. And it wasn't until I sort of reread this and actually thought, what does that mean? And then I'm realizing that unexpected task has everything to do with getting dates.
Yeah. Blake, I think this might be one of my absolute favorite chapter titles of all. I think it's just so, so good. And it, you know, I don't want to criticize too much, but I almost feel like if J.K. Rowling had just left the chapter title stand by itself and not kind of mentioned several times that Harry would have rather fought a Hungarian horntail.
Yes,
I think we would have got there by the end. It's pretty great. I love this chapter title. I think it really gets 14-year-old boys pretty well.
about so
they
true.
Would they would rather fight a dragon than ask a girl to a dance.
I think so. I think when we look at it and once we get into it, we're going to see that this whole chapter really just deals with the issue of dates with girls and the anxiety might that all be surrounding, you know, actually going up and talking to a female in this way about asking them out on a sort of a date or to the ball, and it's going to be quite good. But let's jump into it.
The Christmas holidays are quickly approaching at Hogwarts. In light of this, Professor McGonagall mentions that an additional crucial element of the Triwizards tournament will soon take place, the Yule Ball. A feast and a dance take place on Christmas Day, while the four champions are required to open the dancing with their partners. Over the next few weeks, students attempt to secure dates for themselves, Harry and Ron struggling more than most. They have the odd realization that suddenly there appear to be far more girls than they had previously realized at Hogwarts, and also realize that they can never seem to talk to one of them alone. Harry wants to ask Cho Chang, but she is almost always surrounded when he tries to approach her. As a champion, Harry begins to receive invitations from girls he doesn't know. This only increases his felt urgency about finding a date. On the last day of the term, Ron and Harry make a pact to find dates that day. Harry finds Cho and asks her to the ball. She kindly declines, saying that she is already going with Cedric Diggory. Harry returns to Gryffindor common room dejected. There he finds Ron looking exactly as he feels. Ginny informs him that Ron, in a spur-of-the-moment decision, decided to ask out Fleur Delacour. As he thinks through their diminishing options, Ron suggests that they just take Hermione and Ginny. Hermione responds that she already has agreed to go with someone, and Ginny adds that she is going with Neville. At that moment, Parvati and Lavender walk into the common room. Harry asks both of them out for himself and Ron. Parvati agrees, but Lavender already has a date. However, she agrees to ask her sister Padma if she will go with Ron. Even with his date sorted, Harry feels that the Yule Ball is turning out to be both more difficult and more work than the other tasks so far.
So I feel like, Josh, this is, since this is a chapter all about, I guess, this predicament that Ron and Harry put themselves into, really, but I want to give them a bit of sympathy because I remember being in their shoes. I remember, you know, maybe also sort of forcing myself to, you know, almost man up and get into it. But I do think that I'm with Harry that this is a little bit harder for him in the way, even though that he is a champion and he has that pull, let's say, the pull of being a champion.
The champion's pull.
Yes, that's awesome. We find that like being a regular person now, you know, like Ron, just
are we prepared to call Ron a regular person? That's a bold decision just for you to make on behalf of the podcast.
That is true. Okay. I'm going to take Ron out of the situation. I'm going to say a regular student, you know, Seamus,
Fred and George, you know,
yeah. Fred and George, man, I believe it's Fred, right? That asks Angelina.
Hey, Angelina.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. And that man does it right, you know. That I feel like let's just forget what I was going to say and talk about the Weasleys. The Weasleys have a little bit of a pull of their own, right? You know.
Oh, do they ever?
Their characters, they're fun, and I really think it's quite an interesting shift on, you know, they're in the same circumstance in a way as Ron, with the family being you know, not wealthy, maybe rather poor and not having a lot of money and stuff. So they've probably got hand-me-down clothes as well, things like that. Like, they're not. But the thing they do have is that sort of almost that determination, the drive, you know, their whole Weasley's wizard wheezes, you know, like they're smart and they're a lot of fun. I think the characters, so everybody likes them. And it's just real interesting to be like, you know, there's just no shame. And Fred just blurts that out, being like, hey, Angelina, you know, whether that's the right way to go about it, if we're discussing tactics, yelling across the common room or whatever it is. I do think that the Weasleys are a good case of just getting in there, doing it, you know, asking and not procrastinating too much.
Yeah. I feel like another thing they do, Blake, is they just recognize that they're not asking someone to marry them. They're asking someone to a school ball.
That's a good point.
You know, I think they kind of just defang the scariness of the event, which Ron and Harry have certainly worked up in their minds.
Yep. They've just seen this as more as like, hey, this is a tradition. I'm usually meant to go and ask someone to come with me, you know? And so, hey, Angelina, you free? Like, would you be keen? You know, and then
we have some listeners out there who wish that they would have been a little bit more romantic, but, you know, we are comparing them to Harry and Ron. So it's not like we're, you know, comparing them to, I don't know, pick the most romantic person, you know. This is a pretty low standard.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very low standard. It's not like Harry and Ron eventually decide to pluck up the courage and they have 1,000 flowers delivered and it rains down upon the ladies and then they approach them and ask them. You know, there's no grand gesture here. It's out of desperation that Harry finally plucks up the courage and goes actually and asks girls. So it's really that, like, this.
And he just kind of goes rapid fire towards the end.
Yes, he really picks up. And Lavender, can you go with Ron? You know, and he starts all of a sudden, if you let Harry go, he's like, all right, ladies, come in. Who hasn't got a partner? And he's sort of overcorrecting Josh that, you know, he's starting to be matchmaker now for everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
Not just Ron, but he's like, all right, boys, girls, gather in, you know, and he gets.
You get a date.
He is the Oprah Winfrey of dishing out dates. Oh, that's really good. So, what do you even see as the key theme of a chapter like this, Josh? Like, is it procrastination? Is, you know, what would you imagine this would, I guess, best sums this up? Like teenage angst,
I was just about to say teenage angst. Yes, I think that's probably the theme right now is teenage angst.
Yes,
which turns a dragon into a small little lizard in the mind of Harry, thinking, just give me another Hungarian horntail rather than asking out a girl.
I love it. Yeah, no, I think that makes sense, because under teenage angst, you get all that sort of relationship girl problems that these boys are going through. That I guess they've worked up in their head, and I feel like they are younger, right? They're less mature, and so I think more of that goes through their mind. Where maybe some of the older guys, like I would imagine, you know, the people in Fred and George's year level would be, you know, some of them still would be very anxious about this, right? You know, it's still nerve-wracking asking someone to go, because nobody wants to be rejected. And you've got to have quite the personality like Fred and George do to kind of be so bold and not feel like, oh, I'm rejected. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a good connection, because Angelina is, correct me if I'm wrong, but Angelina's on the Quidditch team, the Gryffindor.
That's right.
Team.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like already there's a bit of that connection. And this is the sort of thing that if we look at Fred and Angelina, we can kind of put a little bit of a comparison about what didn't happen with Ron and Hermione. that, you know, because they're so close of friends, Fred and Angelina, because they're in the same Quidditch team and they've already got that sort of connection, that, you know, same with Ron and Hermione being, you know, best friends, that if Ron just straight up said, like, Hermione, like, would you be keen to go to the ball with me, you know, or something like that I think, you know, Hermione would just be like, yes, that would be awesome. Thanks. Done. Yeah. You know, like, and it's, but it's because Ron just does not think of Hermione in that way. And we can get into that.
Hermione, you're a girl.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Hermione Granger. Her big character development this chapter is that Josh, she's a girl.
We find that out, Blake.
We find that out. I don't think
it's we may have about, suspected, but right now we know.
We may have suspected, but I don't think in the previous three books that it talks about how Hermione is a girl. And so it's really good that Rowling is putting this in for us as the readers, yeah, to know that's right. Hermione is a girl.
Or a lot more depth added this way.
A lot more depth added this way. It's sort of like a real good kind of, oh man, cliffhanger kind of, or like holding on to that. And then now she's giving that to us. So that's pretty funny. But at least, yeah, Ron realizes that Hermione is a girl.
So good. It's so, I just love that line so much, Blake. Yeah, so Harry Potter at this point, Blake, we know he's had some interesting glances at Cho Chang. He's watched her from across the Great Hall.
Creepy.
Yeah.
You know, like, as you said, watched her across the hall, you know. It seems a little bit creepy.
I hope Harry's intentions are all good there. And he wants to ask her to the ball. This is the only girl on his mind. And Blake, I'm sure if you were to ask Harry, what did you think was going to happen when you asked her on the last day of term? I mean, normally, Blake, for us in New Zealand, the last day of term is at most like a week and a half before Christmas, usually in winter.
Okay.
Climates like this could be maybe a few days before this is so close. What did Harry think was going to happen? She's very kind about it, but she turns him down, right?
Yeah, she is very kind about it, which speaks to Cho Chang in herself, that she's a bit gutted, and I think the movie scene does this really well, that it kind of keeps that sort of like she is gutted that she has to turn Harry down and say no to Harry, and so I think the movie does this well. I will also quickly tack in that the movie does really well the intro to McGonagall dancing.
Oh, yeah, that's a good scene.
And then getting Ron up to dance and put my hand where, you know, and anyway, so that's a side thing. We'll get into that in the movie episode because I do love that scene. But Cho Chang is really sweet here, and we know that she's very beautiful and pretty, and I think she would have had a lot of friends, and so it's kind of like, yeah, it's a bit ridiculous for Harry to think that he could ask her so late and assume that, you know, she's just holding out for the right guy. For Harry Potter, when that wouldn't really actually be the case, because like you said, it's so close to Christmas by this point. So we really see that Harry in himself is procrastinating, and it's, you know, it's good to note that he's procrastinating with the egg when Hermione asks him about the egg and being like, hey, you know, we've got plenty of time.
Yeah, so he's not really concerned at all, Blake.
No, not concerned at all. This like important tournament thing, he hasn't like given it any thought, and he won't for a while. And so we see how that is coming into play with procrastinating with the egg sort of, I guess, clue, to also procrastinating with asking Cho to the ball. And so that's a bit gut-wrenching. But Josh, I did want to ask, when we're talking about balls, this is a bit of a chapter on school dances and balls and things like that. Did you have a school dance? Did you have a senior, leavers ball or a, you know, at school in Canada? What was it like for you?
Yeah, no, we did. We had one. So at our school, it was just for the leavers. I know a lot of schools have like a prom every year for maybe like the senior students, like maybe the last 3 years. But our school just had the one big thing, in addition to like very low key student dances compared to that, but one formal. We went to a golf course that had a special meal there, and then we had some dancing afterwards. Yeah, it was good.
Now, Josh, you don't have to you know say any names if you specifically went with anybody. But did you take anybody to this this formal to this ball?
I did not actually. No, I had a big group of friends that that none of us were dating anybody, and so we all decided to kind of just go as a big group with one or two exceptions, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah,
nice. Yeah, rather than specifically being like, I think
yeah. So the couple of the people who were in something resembling a relationship, it was high school after all, you know, still went ahead. But I think the rest of us kind of thought, let's not, you know, add somebody into our pretty tight knit group just for the night, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You know, that makes sense. It sounds like a cool time, like, you know, like with the posse, of the boys,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and,
the boys.
And hanging out. Were there any like, slow dances and things like that, or was it mainly because I feel like for myself it was a leavers ball for me, but I didn't do my last year at high school,
right?
And so okay. And you know, maybe the listeners of the podcast thinking, oh no, you know, he dropped out, you know. Hey, I went and did another education. I went to a design school after that. But anyway,
how did that work, Blake? Yeah. Explain.
So I didn't go to my own leavers ball. It was year 13s only, which is our in New Zealand. It's our final year at high school. And so I didn't go to my school's one, but at my youth group, with where kind of all my sort of main friends were, I did end up going with a girl to her own ball. So my best friend went to that school as well. So it was kind of
right,
like
cool.
Everybody that was like my friend at youth group were kind of heading to that ball, and so I went with her, and so that was quite nice. So it was in this case kind of more along the lines of like, oh hey, did you want to come along? You know, did you want to just join it?
And so this girl was like part of your friend group as well. Nice, cool.
Exactly. So then they kind of like there was I think. Only one couple in that I think were actually going out, were dating, or were very close to it, and then so they went together, and then anyway, it was kind of like that, and it was really fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, I look back on those photos of what I wore, and now with my maybe design style, now I look back and I go, ugh, atrocious. But kind of like looking at it myself, like Ron's looking at his dress robes. Am I right? You know.
Oh,
but
I don't know. I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can claim the dress robes as bad as we're led to believe they are. I think those would have, nearly almost always been a bad idea. Hey.
Yes. Yeah. No. Definitely.
I'm sure. But anyway, I'm sure your attire was a good idea for the time.
Yes, I think it was good. I think it was. Yeah. I'm making out to be worse than it actually was. It was pretty simple and nice and easy. So that's there you go. Those are our school dances experiences and our school balls. I never had. I think I'd have to take it all the way back to like my middle school kind of intermediate age where I'm actually asking to go to a formal or a prom or whatever. And I ask a girl to go with me, and I just can't think back that far and see did I ask a girl to go with me, or was it when I was there at the prom? And then you ask a girl to dance. Cause I do remember that at intermediate, I don't think we went with anybody specific. But when you were there, you did actually, there was a time where you actually had to go and ask a girl to dance. That was actually structured in, that was part of it, that you did have to ask a girl to dance. And so you just kind of have to jump on it. Otherwise you're late to the ball. And there was one moment in high school that I'll my last little story is that in high school it was sort of junior, and we were doing dancing in sort of PE or gym or something like that. And they had a moment where you're like, all right, you know, guys, go pick your partner, you know? And I was just kind of the decision, just start walking. Cause we were sort of boys were like in one group and girls were in one group. Yeah. It was very much like the packs that this chapter talks about for the ladies. And I just said, you know what? And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here. I'm just trying to say I would be that person to procrastinate. And I just started walking. I just started walking towards someone. I don't know who I chose. I just said, oh, did you want to dance? And, you know, and just to make light of it, just
did you? You started the ball. You got the ball rolling.
Yeah. I got the ball rolling. Exactly. Did I jump down to one
Pun
knee?
Unintended.
Did I jump down to one knee and propose then and there? No, I didn't. And I'm thankful that I didn't, because it was just a dance. I didn't need to marry anybody. So coming back to Ron and Harry. Come on, boys, stop procrastinating. Just do it.
Well, and especially because, like, surely, well, maybe, I don't know. I shouldn't say surely, but as much as they kind of just at the last minute go like, oh, two girls who just walked in, we'll ask you now. Like, as much as they kind of just do that, are there not any, like, friends of Ginny they could ask who would, like, be beyond thrilled to go because they're not going yet, you know? Like,
yes.
I feel like even though they've left it this late, think about if you're, like, a third year who just would love to go but hasn't been invited.
Exactly. That's why Ginny, said yes to Neville, right? Because she wouldn't be able to go. So, you know, surely there would be a couple of nice girls that, like, are just good friends with Ginny, and Ginny can, like, vouch for them. But that would be a bit of a sting, an extra sting to Ginny, because as we know and as we read, she is upset hearing that Harry asked Cho first and foremost, which is a great little extra, you know, even though this sort of chapter deals with the subplot of, like, Harry's present kind of interest, which is Cho Chang, it does offer a little something towards the Harry and Ginny Weasley sort of plot there, but she's upset.
Well, and the fact that she's disappointed that she's said yes to Neville in some way, like,
yes.
You know, she's it's so both
true.
Ways. Yeah, she's sad that Harry's asking someone else, and sad that she's been asked now because she realizes she was going to be next.
Exactly. She would be second best, right?
Yeah.
And
at this point, she's very happy being second best, I think.
she would have been happy to take, you know, Harry right after he off the back of, like, not being able to go with Cho. And so the arrangement that, like, I think Ron comes up with, like, well, I'll go with, you know, Hermione, and Harry, you go with Ginny, and, like,
that is such a great part of the chapter. Ron just making plans. He's like, I know how to fix this.
He's like, where were you? Where was this sort of planner, Ron, at the start of, you know, all this kind of decision making? It's just procrastination is just such a horrible thing, and also that confidence in not getting too worked up over the little things, you know, can help us out a lot. And if Ron did that right at the start and was just like, "Hey, Hermione, would you want to come with me?" and then, like, suggest to Harry, being like, "Harry, like, you know, like, you should take Ginny or something. Like, she'd love to go, blah blah blah," or whatever. But, you know, maybe Harry obviously was a bit blinded by his current interest of Cho, that he should have just gone and asked her. But anyway, so we get a bit of a character development with the Ginny Weasley there, that she's unfortunately still cannot have Harry Potter. But yeah,
she'll get him one day.
She'll get him one day.
So, Blake, we also I know we've talked all about it, but just formally, world building, we find out about the Yule Ball in this chapter. And definitely seems to be a big deal. And really, perhaps from the, like, organizer's perspective of wizarding cooperation, this might be the most important event of the whole Triwizard Tournament, Blake, because, you know, you have all of the tasks where people are just watching, and the champions are participating, but now everybody's coming in to do this together. And so this is a really important thing, as far as, you know, if we're to believe this is primarily about wizarding cooperation across nations, you know, this is really important.
Yeah, if it is about that, then this event is for everybody. And that's why I think, as part of the Triwizard Tournament, it's probably an event that everybody looks forward to. It's, you know, accompanied with a great feast, so why not, right? A good Christmas feast, but also some entertainment and some dancing and things like that. The champions opening the dance themselves, now that would make me nervous. But thankfully, you know, quickly, you know, Dumbledore comes in and other teachers come in, and then all of a sudden eyes aren't on you. But one thing that I do feel like, you know, people worry a lot about that issue, you kind of got to think, like, everybody's almost, like, too concerned with themselves to then be, like, thinking and judging other people sometimes. And so I do think that, you know, once everybody's dancing underway, they're probably not concerned with how Harry and Parvati look there, or Hermione and Crumb. Maybe they're just happy to be dancing with their partner, or worried about stepping on their shoes, their toes, or things like that. So it's quite interesting. But yeah, we get the Weird Sisters playing. They're a band. So, I think they're all male wizards. I don't think they're witches, even though they're the Weird Sisters. And so seems like quite an interesting band that we get, obviously, more of a sneak peek into on the movie. So I feel like they're almost like a little bit of they do slow dance, but then they get into like some rock music or whatever. So, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that is at various times in my life, depending on how old I was when I watched the movie, that rock scene is potentially one of the most cringeworthy scenes of the movie, and or hilarious and or enjoyable. So depends what mood I'm in, I think, with that scene.
That's so true.
And Blake, the last thing I wanted to mention, this is a very small thing, but I think it's important. World building. The comment is made that Harry is so distracted making his decisions about who to ask to the ball that he totally messes up his antidote. And in his antidote, he leaves out the key ingredient, a Beazor. And
yes,
what I'm struggling to understand is why you would waste a Beazor putting it in an antidote when it does the work of an antidote almost by itself.
I was thinking the exact same thing, because it's only after we read the Half-Blood Prince, right, that we know that shove a Beazor in the mouth. And I wonder if it's like, you know, using the Beazor, like the properties kind of transfer into the potion or whatever, or the antidote, and
maybe you can take it out.
Maybe you can take it out. Maybe you can reuse it, or yeah, like putting a whole Beazor into your mouth. Maybe that's not as nice of a thing. It's a bit like extreme. Whereas maybe for the more subtle, because remind you, that was a pretty big poisoning. And you know, maybe it's a bit more of a subtle thing. Maybe this is just one of those moments where, you know, since she introduced a Beazor here, that after, you know, in that later book, and it's just a sole Beazor, maybe that's where it changed a little bit. The idea changed, you know, when you introduce something in a previous book, and you know, Rowling doesn't do that often, but then she kind of twists the use of it a little, and then or adds a meaning to it.
I think that's maybe a good comment, Blake. And I was thinking that as well, is like, is it something that you can almost like a, I don't know if I have anything quite in mind, but I'm trying to think if there's like a soup ingredient that you would like put in, but then like take out and use again. I don't know if there is. Maybe like a
bay leaf. Go ahead. Like, you know how you do.
Bay leaves you don't really use again, but something like that. Yeah. And so, yeah, maybe that's how it works, because it's a stone taken from a goat's stomach. So it sounds like it wouldn't like dissolve, presumably. I don't know.
Yes.
It's just interesting. Yeah. So definitely not the point of the chapter, but I couldn't help but mention it because I was struck by how weird it was.
Agreed. Do we have literary device? Oh, chapter.
Yeah. So, for the literary device, just mentioned the chapter title. Love the chapter title. I think it's hilarious to think about this as Harry's fourth task, and the task that he, not even arguably, but certainly does the worst in. You know, this is the only task that he finishes last in.
The only task where Fred just takes, you know, first place, really, in the asking of a girl to the prom, you know, and go Fred. So he wins, even though he's not a champion. He is a champion to us, a champion among men. And just does it. So that's pretty sweet. And then significance wise, I mean, this essentially gives service. This whole chapter gives service to a bit of the romance, a bit of the love side of you know, these relationships that are forming, because we're kind of getting older now in these books, and so those interests and things are starting to come in. And I do love that about Rowling, that she's starting to introduce some sort of more serious themes as her readership kind of grows older. So this chapter gives that service to Harry and Cho's subplot, as well as a bit of the Hermione-Ron relationship there, just with, you know, Ron's lack of
a little development there.
Exactly. Yeah. Little development there. But thanks for listening to today's episode. To support the podcast and keep the magic alive, you can leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. You can also support us financially at www.buymeacoffee.com/muffliatopod. And to send us questions on our Instagram, email, or website, you can go to muffliatopodcast.com. To continue the adventure, join us next time as we discuss the 23rd chapter of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, the Yule Ball.